was a big week for gold investors. The XAU Gold Index recorded one of its best showings, up over 20% in 1 week, 30% in the past 2 weeks. Well, welcome back to Gold Seek Radio, everyone. Chris Waltzik here. Great to be with you. We've got another big show, including Jeffrey Nichols of Roslyn Capital. He returns with his latest insights on the precious metals sector is reversing course in a stealth rally and thinks the Fed policymakers are finished raising rates. And we're starting to see signs of that in the Fed funds indicating maybe no rate hikes in 2016. He expects the yellow metal to eclipse its 2010 zenith, ascending above $2,000 an ounce before the end of next year, and perhaps $3,000 to $5,000 an ounce within the next 5 to 7 years. Then Bob Hoy, another gold bull, joins the show. He thinks U.S. equities have entered a bear market, presenting an excellent buying opportunity for gold and silver. He says gold mines in particular are lean and mean and ready to fly higher amid low crude oil expenses and inexpensive properties for acquisition. You can call our hotline at 1-206-6665-370. Put it on a post-it pad near your phone or program it right into your phone. 1-206-6665-370. GoldSeek.com radio begins now with a market weather recap. Visibility virtually unlimited over the New York COMEX exchange as investors worldwide turn to the yellow metal safe haven amid continued stock market concerns. Gold has added about 10% for the year, while the XAU is higher by nearly 30% so far. By Friday's close, the yellow metal was up $40 for the week, 3.5%, finishing at $11.57. Silver got near $15, ending at $14.78, over 50 cents, 3.5%. And the XAU Gold and Silver Equities Index added 9 points, about 20%, ending at $55. West Texas Intermediate crude fell, however, nearly $3, ending just shy of $31 a barrel. Well, the top story driving the precious metals sector this week, inflationary news from the domestic jobs report. On Friday, the Labor Department announced the U.S. jobless rate fell in January to the lowest level since the credit crisis of 2008, well below 5%. This was viewed as highly inflationary news when combined with the hourly earnings figures that were also above anticipated. On the surface, it would seem dollar bullish and metals bearish, as strong jobs tend to be emblematic of a overheating economy, which would lead to rate hikes. However, we have the backdrop of last week's BOJ negative rate announcement, and then across on the right side of the pond, the ECB's negative rate policies, policymakers may not raise rates for the rest of this year. The Fed funds futures odds for the rate hike have now plunged across the board, suggesting rates could stay around 50 basis points in 2016. This is a significant change in perception, I think, by investors, and solid news for the precious metals, which tend to soar amid negative interest rate conditions. In addition, the dollar fell sharply this week as global investors who had anticipated further rate hikes this year were disappointed by the labor report, which indicated only 190,000 jobs were created. That was significantly lower than December. The news encouraged the gold ETF and gold silver share purchases. Holdings in the top gold ETF leaped to 1,550 metric tons as of Thursday, marking the 14th consecutive rise and the longest run in about 3 years. Precious metals, bottom line. Clearly, dollar weakness and buying from New Year celebrations in China boosted the precious metals over the last few weeks. Gold climbed above the 50-period moving average this week for the first time in a year. And I'd expect, though, that momentum to wane sometime soon, which would give us then a solid indication of the underlying strength of the bull market during that reaction. In other words, I'd like to see how the metals hold up during the first incoming salvo. Moving on to the Wall Street Report, cloudy skies hovered over the New York Stock Exchange on lower-than-expected jobs numbers. Investors took funds off the table amid ambiguous comments from Fed officials. The Dow finished at 16,204, off 261, about 1.5% for the week, while the S&P 500 finished at 1880, off 60, about 3%. The NASDAQ was off 250, about 5.5%, at 43.63. The big story moving stock this week continues to stem from the FOMC. Despite a lower unemployment rate figure, much lower than expected jobs numbers, and below forecasts, Policymakers do seem to be boxed in a corner. On the one hand, they continue to talk about their target rates, but it's virtually impossible, I think, to battle inflation when the global economy is sliding into a recession. As a result, the market sold off hard. We saw software, internet, technology, and automakers high on the decline list as investors turned instead to many of the commodities and gold miners, as well as a handful of oil stocks. Bottom line on Wall Street, the CBOT, VIX, and VBIX are flashing red, suggesting we more than likely will see some selling ahead. I expect further volatility next week. Coming up after the break, more GoldSeek.com Radio. Stay with us. Welcome back, Jeffrey Nichols.
It's nice to be here, Chris.
Start off today with just what's on your radar screen. Any topicality?
Right now, I think I'm looking at gold and feeling relatively encouraged that we're in a sustainable uptrend and that we've seen the lows of the cycle, and the next few years are going to be a very positive time for gold investors, with prices rising to new heights, perhaps even by the end of the year, and certainly in the next few years. It's been a difficult time for gold bulls, certainly.
No, I think it's well said, and it's time for a stampede here. So let's hope.
I think we could see one. But the important thing in terms of looking at the last few years, we always advocate that investors hold a minimal core holding in physical gold, bullion coins or small bars, as an insurance policy and as a hedge against the risks that are inherent in more conventional equity and fixed income investments. And so when you hold some gold for that reason, you really, in a sense, don't want to see it increase in price, because that would be an indicator that we've got more serious problems in the economy, and that's not something that we should be happy to see. Although at times you do want to hold more than the 5 to 10%, and I think we're entering a period like that right now.
It's a bit bifurcated, because on the one hand, it really doesn't matter whether you're in a period of inflation or deflation. It just happens to be an important component of every portfolio. I think it benefits from almost any situation, and I think that's what you're alluding to. But increasing exposure, the type of comments one would expect from someone who sees dangerous financial and economic conditions on the horizon.
We're certainly in treacherous territory. You know, the world economy is, in a sense, walking on a knife edge. Globally, economic activity is still decreasing in China, in India, in Africa, in Latin America. Economies are all under pressure, and stock markets around the world are in retreat. And here in the United States, it's questionable, despite the Fed's, the Federal Reserve's actions to raise interest rates a month ago. It's possible we're back in a declining or weakening economic situation, and the Fed is going to find itself having to take heroic action to prevent the economy from sliding into renewed recession or worse.
You talk about the economic situation on a knife's edge.
I would say you should be holding some gold, and the amount that any investor decides to hold should be a function of their exposure to the risks inherent in other investment assets. So if you've got a sizable portion of your wealth tied up in equities or fixed income instruments, I think that the argument for holding gold becomes stronger and stronger. Investors around the world seem always to be a step or two ahead of the United States. And on a global basis, we see very strong demand for gold. And gold, importantly, is in the last year, or even the last few years, while the price has been coming down, there's been a transfer in the ownership of gold from west to east, from the old industrial world to the younger, newly industrialized economies led by China and India. But the people who are buying in these countries outside the U.S. are long-term holders. Gold is moving into strong hands and is held by people who are unlikely to sell anytime soon. You know, they're accumulating for the long run. And for many of these people, the long run is measured in generations, not in months or years. So in addition, we have central banks, again, from China, but also Russia and a bunch of smaller economies. Besides, it wants to be buying more gold. There's going to be a shortage of available supply. And I would underline the word available. So response in price is likely to be far quicker and far greater in magnitude than most people would imagine possible for the next couple of years. And looking at the other side of the equation, while gold has been going to Asia and the East, if you will, it's being sold in the West mostly by institutional speculators, bullion dealers and bullion bankers, commodity funds and hedge funds, who have no vested interest in gold per se. They just see it as one of a long list of possible markets for speculation or investment. And when their views of markets change, which I think is happening now, when their views of markets and value change, they're going to become pro-gold once again after many years of being sort of on the short side of the gold market, if you will. And they're going to start buying as well, a reversal from the last few years when institutional speculators have been sellers. And we've seen it even in the last few weeks in terms of the renewed inflow of bullion into gold ETFs, whereas in the last few years, ETFs have been a source of selling. Now they're becoming once again an avenue of demand. And that, too, is going to put pressure on the price as it continues and as the shortage of physical gold becomes more apparent.
You know, I debated for, it seemed like, for years with many of our top guests who just said they can't raise rates. It won't happen. You know, the Fed funds futures are demanding higher rates. We will see higher. No, they can't. Eventually, most of our guests have capitulated. And, of course, that can be a downdraft for the precious metals.
Well, I think, first of all, there's a very widespread misconception about how gold behaves during periods of rising interest rates. The historical evidence suggests that, contrary to that viewpoint, gold has risen and is likely to rise as interest rates go up. We saw that in the 1970s when gold went from $35 an ounce to briefly just over $800 an ounce in 1980. And we've seen it again during recent years of gold price appreciation. It's also been occurring with the Fed in a tightening mode and interest rates rising. So I don't buy the argument that if the Fed tries to tighten a little bit, that it's going to hurt the gold price. I think, in fact, quite the opposite. The reason the Fed might try and raise rates further is because the economy, in their view, seems to be strengthening. But when I look at the economy, I don't see it strengthening. I see it weakening and vulnerable to further setbacks. And that suggests to me that, in contrast to expectations of rising interest rates, which in any event wouldn't destroy a gold bull market, I think interest rates could very well come down back to zero or into negative territory, or we could see some newfangled policy instruments that might, with the hope of stimulating the economy from the Fed's point of view, maybe another round of quantitative easing or something we haven't yet seen, some new instrument or method of stimulating through monetary policy. I think we're more likely to see that than we are likely to see rising interest rates. When it becomes apparent that the Fed, in a sense, has used its last policy tools and is still facing a weakening economy, I think that is going to be very positive for gold. You know, in the 1930s, now this is a long time back to be making an illustration, but nevertheless, in the 1930s, gold prices were hiked by the central bank under President Franklin Roosevelt as a stimulative measure. We could see something like that again, where the Fed, in fact, pushes gold prices higher as part of an effort to stimulate the economy.
1970s, higher rates, much higher gold prices, despite naysayers, as well as Barsky and Summers, you know, seminal paper, which highlighted the importance of negative real interest rates underlying the precious metals.
Importantly, it's real interest rates that really matter. And honestly, who knows where real interest rates are, because the inflation statistics are so undependable or unreliable. I think inflation is probably significantly higher than the statistics would indicate. We're in a sense in treacherous waters, and the ship of state is going one way or the other in some unpredictable fashion. As I said, I think the consumer price index and other price indicators are not really true signals of what's happening to prices in the marketplace. You know, any housewife who goes to the grocery store knows that prices have been rising over the last few years, whereas the statistics suggest just the opposite. And here, as an aside, let me just say, I recently had some problems with my cable TV and internet service. And I recall a few years ago, if you called the cable company, they'd send over a technician to find out what was wrong and fix it. Now, you're lucky if you can get somebody on the phone, and you're spending your own time dealing with the problem, maybe over the phone with a technical support person. But it's equivalent to a price increase when you're spending your own time rather than the vendor spending his time dealing with problems of one sort or the other. Gold is going to go up anyway when sentiment in the markets change a bit, because a shortage of supply in the face of rising demand is going to push prices up. We have to remember that the gold market, the physical market, is increasingly under the sway of Asia, and not of the United States, not of Western Europe, but China and its satellite countries in Southeast Asia. And their interest in buying gold is for reasons much different than we in the West buy or hold or do whatever we do with gold. They're buying it, as I said before, for the long term. They're buying it for because of cultural, religious reasons, and they feel comfortable holding gold much more so than they would feel about owning equities or real estate. Those markets have gone through the ringer already in China. And they're still overinflated. They're still in a bubble situation. And this is only going to feed demand from the average consumer, the average household, the average investor at the retail level in China and elsewhere in Asia. And when that demand continues and the supply from the West, from the U.S. and Western Europe, diminish, we're going to have higher prices, whatever happens to interest rates in the United States, whatever happens to inflation in the Western world. Those may be icing on the cake if they're supportive of gold prices, but it's not necessary for us to see gold at new heights in the next few years.
With that type of subterfuge, with this type of covert operations all over the developed and developing world, you know, you don't have to have this Weimar-like currency disruption or global conflict. You have this contrarian play.
You don't have to be bearish on some of these economic factors, interest rates, inflation, growth. They may be pro-gold, and I think to some extent they will be, but they're not likely to prevent gold from going higher in any event. I think it's sort of whether it's nighttime or daytime, we're going to see the path to higher prices, whatever happens in the economy. The world is a very uncertain place, and as we've seen in recent years, subject to sort of what's called black swan events, you know, bolts from the blue, things that are unpredicted, haven't been predicted, maybe unpredictable, but they come out of the blue, and those are the things that could send gold higher.
And we're saying we're accepting the fact that we're not sure, but we can't fill in all the blanks yet. So we don't want to leave ourselves exposed. And again, it brings me back to safety net for your portfolio.
I think, importantly, gold is a win-win in the sense that whatever happens, gold prices today are undervalued and they will go higher in the next few years by more than most analysts would dare guess or predict. We're very bullish on gold simply because the supply is in strong hands and insufficient to meet likely demand in the next few years.
Your work seems to imply that that correction is nearing its end. Do you then anticipate the yellow metal to eclipse its 1900 peak from 2010?
Yes, yes, most definitely. I think that that could go, if not by the end of this year, certainly next year. And that will be not the end of the bull market in gold, but just a stopping point as we go to much higher prices in the next several years. I wouldn't be surprised to see gold 3 or 4 or 5 6 7 years from now at $3,000, $4,000, maybe even $5,000 an ounce. You know, when you get a market reflecting sentiment, it has the possibility of going far beyond where the fundamentals and the reasonable analysis would suggest. So at some point, I think we're going to see exactly that, an inflow into gold in a sense that is beyond justification, that's going to bring us to very, very high prices. The secret for investors will be, you know, is it time to take profits on some of our holdings? And that's the sort of thing that investors have to be thinking about, but not for several years. I mean, the Dow is now around 16,000, if I got it right. That's maybe far above where gold is likely to go. And I think gold investors would be happy and rejoicing if we just hit 4,000 or even 3,000. So I think those are more reasonable targets in a period of a blow-off. It could go much higher. But I don't think 16,000 is in the cards, not in our lifetimes anyway.
Very good. So you're not looking for a wholesale destruction, for a reset.
I think we're going to muddle through somehow. I mean, we always have, and there could be difficult times ahead, particularly if you're one of the people who have lost a lot of money in stocks or in real estate. Those are markets that have done well in the last few years. Some would say they're in a bubble, but when the bubble bursts, you know, it can go the other way very quickly.
Tell folks more, please, about the services you provide and any contact information you'd like to leave with the listening audience today.
Well, I would suggest that, first of all, listeners who are interested in expanding their gold positions or initiating gold positions be in touch with Roslyn Capital directly. I also, apart from my relationship with Rosalind, consult with a number of major players in the world of gold, funds, central banks, mints, mining companies, and the like. So those services are not something that would necessarily be of interest to your listeners and customers. But they can also follow my thinking on my website, which is nicholsongold.com, get an up-to-date reading on my thinking about the marketplace and where gold is going.
Jeffrey Nichols, we want to thank you for your time and look forward to having you back here on GoldSeek.com Radio.
Well, thanks for having me. It's been a pleasure and a lot of fun talking with you.
Here is your mining quiz for the day, compliments of GoldSeek. Which company has the largest undeveloped gold reserve in North America? Seabridge Gold. Now, which company has the largest undeveloped copper reserve in North America? Seabridge Gold again. Seabridge has more gold reserves than Kinross, Yamana, and Agnico Eagle. Last year alone, Seabridge added 515 million tons of new inferred resources containing nearly 6 million ounces of gold and more than 6 billion pounds of copper at their giant KSM project in British Columbia, Canada. Now they are drilling at KSM again with multiple rigs in a 25,000-meter program. Find out more by visiting www.seabridgegold.net. Traded on the NYSE, symbol SA, and the TSX, symbol SEA.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.
Hello, Bob.
Chris, good to be with you.
Great to have you back. Volatility in the markets, lots of uncertainty. Reading over the columns, Walmart closing down 250 stores, 150 in the United States. That's three stores per state, mostly peripheral stores, not their supercenters, getting out of the grocery business incrementally. It's a retail apocalypse, they're calling it. I've been telling all my subscribers now to the Alpha Stocks newsletter to buy Amazon shares for years. They're obviously a component here, but what else is going on in this retail apocalypse?
Yeah, I think on the Walmart, who knows that Walmart itself may have been maturing, but an outstanding company for so long, and maybe the old threads are gone, but I think their number one error was when they decided to go to minimum wages, and they couldn't press their suppliers enough. It was an improbable move, probably contributing to their contraction. But, you know, capitalism is the way. It takes out the old services or systems and new ones come along, as you said, with Amazon. But perhaps the retail bubble is over. Perhaps the bubble, the secondary bubble in real estate is maturing. I saw one last night that Hong Kong real estate peaked in August, and prices on an index and have come down quite remarkably. It looks like the blow-off is concluded, and that followed the blow-off in the Shanghai stock market in June. So if you, and perhaps Hong Kong is reflecting maybe much of Asia in residential values. So I think the world has been playing in bubbles again. You had they called it the worst calamity since the 1930s, and that concluded in March 2009. I believe that it concluded naturally. Policymakers believe they ended it, the contraction, and prompted this expansion. So they then got on the mode of extreme ease because, first of all, they thought that the panic would last forever. And then, of course, because the economic expansion determined by GDP was not up to their arbitrary standard, they then kept pushing the financial market. And I always like to point out that it's the public that chooses what will be speculated in. and they chose to speculate in low-grade bonds and the stock market. They did not choose to speculate in commodities or precious metals, which bear market after 2011. The bear market's been on since 2011. So this has always fascinated me, Chris, that the central bank is a one-trick pony. All it can do is ease credit. So you went through this 1970s where the credit ease went into extreme inflation in wages, CPI, commodities, and then the whole street said, oh, this is it. The Fed's evil. It'll inflate forever, and commodities and precious metals will go up forever. Of course, that was in the market, 1980-81 blow-off in commodity prices, and at the same time a blow-off in interest rates at highs, the long-dated treasury up to 15%. And in Canada, long governments got up to 19%. So then the blowout in commodities crashed, just like 1920 and 21, and it set up an era of financial bubbles. If you look at the money supply figures in late 70s and into the early 80s, and of course the legend is that Paul Volcker personally ended inflation, but if you look at the money supply figures, they didn't stop growing, continued to grow. You had a terrific crash in commodities, and then beginning in 1982, you started a terrific bull market in financial assets, just like the 1920s. So then you had a number of peaks there, of course, the one in 2000 with the tech and dot-com bubble, but it didn't have all the characteristics of a great financial bubble such as in 1929 or 1873. And then that appeared in the peak in 2007, and the consequence was, and the establishment said that it was the worst calamity since the 1930s. So then, just to put the perspective on and where we are now, is that the rebound is on the financial markets was the first bull market out of a classic crash, and the recovery, such as it has been, is the first business cycle out of a classic crash. And the business cycle is probably matured in the summer. And looking at automobile sales in the U.S. and, as I said, the housing market in Hong Kong and other things, it looks like a global recession is starting. And in the U.S., of course, the National Bureau of Economic Research sets the beginning and end of each recession. And they're usually they're not a predictive organization, so they always look over the shoulder. And oftentimes they've decided and announced the start of the recession a year after it actually started. So the only mystery is when will the NBER decide the recession and what date will they say it started. I would guess maybe September or something like that. So anyways, I think we're in the next contraction, and definitely on credit side, it's getting very sticky out there. Credit spreads have been widening, particularly since June, when the reversal came into widening, and that's always a bad sign. And then on our model, what we were looking for is by the end of July that the second technical breakout to widening would have been accomplished. But that took place in the first week in August, close enough. And, of course, that pushed off the Shanghai problem, which then fed into the rest of the world, commodity prices and all that sort of stuff. So this is a bad sign when you've got chronically weak commodity prices. But to get back to the theme, Chris, is that the Fed has been the easiest in its history, and it doesn't get economic growth. They talk about an employment number that they like, but they always overlook the 30 or 40 million people that are no longer looking for jobs. So the economic number or the employment number is nonsense. So the instruction on this one will be, and I think the public will figure it out before the policymakers do, is that it's a lot of nonsense, because while they may ease, and their theory is that easy credit drives business activity, we've seen that easy credit does not drive business activity, but it drives speculation. And it did drive speculation in commodities for whatever reason. So I think the public is on the verge of a great discovery of common sense when it comes to policymaking, and it's going to be very interesting. So this is where we're watching the financial markets here. Recently, the S&P or the Dow, whichever you want to look at, became very oversold and set up a bounce. On our work, we figured it would last about 2 weeks, and it also would make a 38% Fibonacci retracement. Well, close to 2 weeks and close to, and a bit higher, I think, than the 38%, but nonetheless, those are the numbers we were looking at. And the actual inside number, I think, was an 8 trading day rally, and that ended a couple of days ago. So, yeah, this next sell-off could be scary, and whether it holds at the lows earlier in January, who knows?
A lot going on in the markets. I mean, we've seen considerable improvement in the precious metals. We saw the yellow metal bounce nearly $100 from its nadir a couple of months ago. It seems counterintuitive, though, because the Federal Reserve raised rates for the first time in nearly a decade, and now they have plans to raise rates again. However, they've thrown a wrench into the mix lately. They've gotten nervous. Apparently, they started to recognize what the rest of us have seen for almost a year, that Europe is in trouble. Earthquake in the economic foundations of Asia. Central bankers are lowering rates in a negative territory. We just heard last week, Shinzo Abe is dropping, you know, their rates into negative territory following the economic ministers in Europe. So this is uncharted territory, and the Fed fund futures are now reflecting this sea change event. The Fed's only going to raise one more time.
The central bankers of around the world have all taken the same economics degrees. They have PhDs in currency depreciation and interest rate manipulation. And it's not been working. I think that they've given up on trying to save the world, and all they're trying to do is prove that their bogus theories are working. And the idea that the Fed is going to raise interest rates 4 times is absolute nonsense. The market has been raising interest rates since January last year. The yield on long-dated treasuries has been going up. Since June of 2014, interest rates on junk bonds have been rising and rising substantially. And the work I've done on financial history is that when you're in bubble land, the changes by the senior central bank on their administered rates have been 5 or 6 months behind what's been going on in market rates of interest. That's either up in yield or down in yield. So the focus that the Fed is getting is misspent. I wouldn't pay any attention to it at all. I would watch market rates of interest, and particularly the credit spreads, the difference between long-dated treasuries and junk bonds. There's more to be learned there than anything that the central bankers would say. So you won't get me to comment on it other than to tell people to ignore it.
Certainly looked as though it was baked into the cake, the economic cake in the markets, that we would see higher rates, but they're backpedaling now.
Chris, they may be backpedaling, But our forecast is that interest rates, particularly for lower grade stuff, junk bonds, are going to continue to rise, whether the Fed does anything with the administered rate or not. That's the one that's baked in the cake. Market rates of interest are going to go up. Now, also, one way looking at it is that there was such a speculative party in junk bonds, so it was an asset price that got inflated to the moon, and you know what happens to asset prices after that. They go down, and the case is the asset is a bond, yields go up. And then also, long-dated treasuries had a very good speculative run, so the long bond became an asset price that became quite inflated. And, of course, market forces will eventually deflate those bonds. So long-dated treasuries going up does not mean that the economy is going to go up or commodities are going to go up. It would be a complete bond revulsion whereby the world begins to reject owning any bond whatsoever, and particularly on low-grade credits, and then that feeds into the long treasury. So we're not bullish on long-dated government bonds, and the yields will likely go up, and the Federal Reserve will likely follow them up. So I don't accept this business that the Fed's going to raise rates four times, and then, of course, here recently they're not. Well, you had a brief little rest in the yields in long bonds and in long junk. So, no, the Fed is merely along for the ride.
Some of our leading guests, like yourself, have gone on record noting that they believe the bottom is in on the yellow metal and that we should expect a resumption of the bull market. Do you suspect then, if that's the case, that investors now will get over their concern about rates and focus more in the direction of market fear, volatility, uncertainty?
Yeah, well, the view we have is that, of course, you want to own some gold for protection. It's an insurance. But to make money out of gold in U.S. dollar terms, one of the problems you have in a post-bubble environment is that the senior currency becomes chronically strong relative to most other currencies and most commodities for most of the time. And so those who are living in countries with the worst currencies have made money in gold. Those in U.S. terms haven't made any money in gold. As a matter of fact, since 2011, it's gone down hugely. So we try and avoid the conversation about trying to make money out of in gold in U.S. dollar terms. Instead, we advise people to look at it, the sector, as an investment, whereby in a post-bubble deflation, the costs of mining go down. That mining cost includes the cost of energy, and if you notice that crude oil has fallen hugely relative to gold. So in previous post-bubble deflations, this has been the case, and you get gold's real price going up, and profitability comes back into the miners, and you make money as an investor in the stock. And you can have this happen as in the early 1930s, where the price of gold was fixed at $20.67 an ounce. And once the 1929 crash was over, the real price increased. And, for example, Homestake stock by the end of 1932, this was before Roosevelt fooled around with the price. So there was no change in the price, and the stock was up something like 135% when the rest of the market was in the tank, and their earnings had improved by around 130%. So this is where we focus on the real price and profitability for the mining operators. And so if you're having a prosperity returning to gold mining, people will be looking for expiration stocks and all that sort of thing. So we think we're close to the start of a new bull market for gold shares based upon a continued rise in gold's real price and an improving operating margins. This does not pay any attention to speculation about where the price of gold will go in U.S. dollar terms.
We typically see, of course, the XAU, HUI, and related precious metals shares indices lead the metals higher. This time around, we might see more of a disconnect.
At some point, you know, of course, in the bull market to 2011, the big ones like Barrick and the stuff we're doing, they were in the wrong places politically, the wrong places as far as terrain goes, and then the wrong kind of geology, where it was awkward metallurgy. So the whole thing became a disaster. So once all of the disasters are written off and you've got good, sound operations going on, as the real price continues to improve for gold, the operating margins will improve, and then the whole thing. Oh, in previous post-bubble deflations, gold has become the premier place to be. Gold mining is outstanding. And you don't have to have the price going up in U.S. dollar terms, or going back even further in sterling when it was the senior currency. Who knows? The U.S. goes back onto a gold standard. Then there's no speculation in the price of gold at all, but there will be investment returns to be made out of the rising real price. So I'm looking forward to it. I think it'll happen. It's because already in the last year you've had a terrific rise in the real price relative to the key commodities such as energy prices as represented by crude oil. And also, when you've had such a disaster in base metal mining, you've got, you know, you can get tires again for the moving equipment. And also, there's a lid on wages when you had a whole lot of base metal miners out of work and you got to go operating gold mining that's doing well. So prospects, the outlook for the gold mining sector is a new bull market. The only thing that's questionable at the moment is actually when does it start? And of course, our technical side looks after that. And we bought a few gold stocks for the first time in a long time a couple of months ago. And then when the latest decline came in, we said this is setting up another opportunity to accumulate some gold stocks. So it becomes an investment world, Chris, rather than speculation and price changes on gold.
Well, that's, I think, the best policy for the overwhelming majority of investors. I had a listener the other day send over his opinion about day trading. I said, you know, one of the best ways to accumulate $1 million in an account is to begin day trading with $1 billion.
I like that one.
I can't stress enough the importance of long-term investing. So as we wrap up here, let's tell folks a bit more about Institutional Advisors, please.
You can find us under that, institutionaladvisors.com, or you can just Google my name. It's easy, B-O-B-H-O-Y-E, and it all comes up into our introduction and into our website.
Very good. A copy of Institutional Advisors on everybody's desktop must have. Bob Hoy, we thank you.
Very good, Chris. Anytime. Look forward to it.
Here is your mining quiz for the day, compliments of GoldSeek. Which company has the largest undeveloped gold reserve in North America? Seabridge Gold. Now, which company has the largest undeveloped copper reserve in North America? Seabridge Gold again. Seabridge has more gold reserves than Kinross, Yamana, and Agnico Eagle. Last year alone, Seabridge added 515 million tons of new inferred resources containing nearly 6 million ounces of gold and more than 6 billion pounds of copper at their giant KSM project in British Columbia, Canada. Now they are drilling at KSM again with multiple rigs in a 25,000-meter program. Find out more by visiting www.seabridgegold.net. Traded on the NYSE, symbol SA, and the TSX, symbol SEA.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.
Here is your mining quiz for the day, compliments of GoldSeek. Which company has the largest undeveloped gold reserve in North America? Seabridge Gold. Now, which company has the largest undeveloped copper reserve in North America? Seabridge Gold again. Seabridge has more gold reserves than Kinross, Yamana, and Agnico Eagle. Last year alone, Seabridge added 515 million tons of new inferred resources containing nearly 6 million ounces of gold and more than 6 billion pounds of copper at their giant KSM project in British Columbia, Canada. Now they are drilling at KSM again with multiple rigs in a 25,000-meter program. Find out more by visiting www.seabridgegold.net. Traded on the NYSE, symbol SA, and the TSX, symbol SEA.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice. We'll be right back.
is your mining quiz for the day, compliments of GoldSeek. Which company has the largest undeveloped gold reserve in North America? Seabridge Gold. Now, which company has the largest undeveloped copper reserve in North America? Seabridge Gold again. Seabridge has more gold reserves than Kinross, Yamana, and Agnico Eagle. Last year alone, Seabridge added 515 million tons of new inferred resources containing nearly 6 million ounces of gold and more than 6 billion pounds of copper at their giant KSM project in British Columbia, Canada. Now they are drilling at KSM again with multiple rigs in a 25,000-meter program. Find out more by visiting www.seabridgegold.net. Traded on the NYSE, symbol SA, and the TSX, symbol SEA.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.
Hey, Chris, this is Robert Ian with ConquerChange.com. Everyone always seems to enjoy a good treasure hunting story, lottery story, or some other kind of potential big win story, where the reader, listener, or viewers can insert themselves into the scene. The idea of winning or getting something for nothing always has universal appeal. A story this week discussed a German teenager who found and gets to keep a $20,000 gold bar she found in a German lake. The unnamed teenager went swimming last August and found a gold bar at the bottom of the lake. Not knowing what to do in such a circumstance, she immediately turned it over to the police, who started what turned out to be a search lasting many months for its rightful owner. After 6 months of searching, the police could not locate the owner. And just last week it was announced that the girl and her family would be allowed to keep the gold bar, weighing in at about 17.6 ounces and valued at about $20,000. As with most mainstream gold stories, the punchline in this article is still very bearish on gold. They conclude by saying, "Finding a half-kilo gold bar is a great investment, but investing in gold has been a losing proposition for nearly 5 years so far." They went on to say that gold prices peaked at about $1,900 an ounce in 2011 and steadily declined ever since. If anyone even bothered to read this much of the article, they were probably already mentally calculating what kind of stuff they could buy if they sold the gold bar at today's depressed prices. Things like a car, a trip, or some other consumable. Because the way the article was written to the uninitiated, the implication is you better get rid of that yellow metal before it loses any more of its value, and you're really left with nothing. Almost as a footnote with no explanation, they did mention, for those that bothered to read clear through to the end, that lately the shiny metal has found some of its luster, that prices have gained more than 5% since the start of the new year, with analysts saying the momentum is likely due to a fall in the dollar and fears of a recession. Gold momentum likely due to a fall in the dollar and fears of a recession? Now that sounds like a real news story to me. But then again, if that was the headline or the premise of the article, they might lose their White House press credentials, because sure enough, they would be labeled as peddling economic fiction. You don't have to worry about such things. So please, speak up, stand up, because the real lie can never become the truth. And until next time, this is Robert Ian with ConquerChange.com, reminding you to follow us on Twitter at ConquerChange. Thanks, Chris.
Okay, Robert, thanks for another excellent installment. Well, that wraps up this week's GoldSeek.com radio episode. For two new big guests, be sure to check out next week's show. Until we talk to you again, have a great week.